From NPR, it's World Cafe. Hey, I'm Kaleo. One of the things I dig about this show is seeing my guests get really detail-oriented. Passion is great, it's needed, but show me how you'll add a barely perceptible sound to a song to evoke a specific emotion. When it comes to songwriting, Jensen McCrae is my kind of obsessive. Born and raised in Southern California, McCrae found her calling in writing, be it essays or journaling, and yes, lyrics. Influenced by classic songwriters like Carole King and James Taylor, she got her bachelor's degree in pop music from USC. So today was a chance to get into the weeds about how McCrae works as a lyricist as we discuss her new album, I Don't Know How, But They Found Me. It was recorded in North Carolina with Brad Cook at the helm. We'll also get into why songwriting involves more math than you think or even consider, and why you shouldn't look to art for healing. Our session gets underway with the song Praying for Your Downfall. It's Jensen McCrae on World Cafe.
Stoned to make a phone call. You're still a bachelor with those blank walls. Keep telling people you're 6 feet tall. I'm finished praying for your downfall. Can't go on thinking it was my fault and pushing pins into a cursed door. Keep draining stars and blaming.
Recorded live at Non-Convention in Philadelphia, it's Jensen McCrae with a performance of Praying for Your Downfall. It's a song from her sophomore album, I Don't Know How, But They Found Me. Jensen McCrae is my guest today. I'm Kaleo. It's World Cafe. Jensen, so nice to meet. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. How's it going? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've had a pretty chill morning, and I'm just enjoying having a couple of days off before I head back out for the next leg of my tour.
Excellent. Yeah, you've got a lot of dates, and we'll get into some of the live performances in a bit. I do want to talk about the record. I want to start with the record because it's been out for a few months now. You know, you are a writer through and through, and that comes in many different forms. Like, people can go check out your Substack and see your blogs or long-form essays or your poetry and, of course, your songs. How do you know when the words you're writing or intending to write are headed for a specific avenue? Or do you go in with a blank slate saying, this is a canvas, I might be writing an essay today? Or do you, like, intentionality when it comes to going, it's a song, I want to write a song?
Sometimes I have that intentionality. Sometimes I know right away. But a lot of times it's just trial and error. Like, there have been times where I've been trying to write a song with a certain line over and over and over again, and then I realize that I can't. And I'm like, oh, that's because this was supposed to be a poem all along. Like, it doesn't have the same lyrical shape that I originally intended. And it works better when it's more free flowing. And I'm not trying to box it into, like, a songwriting structure. And there are times when I'll put a line in an essay, for example, that I pull from a journal, and then I'm like, you know, this is kind of a bar, and I would rather put this in a song than just put it in an essay. So it's just testing things out and moving them around. And sometimes an idea will come to me and I'll put it in a few different forms before I settle on the form that fits the best.
Yeah, makes sense. Are there any parts of your experience that are off limits for songwriting, at least in terms of the work that you share publicly? Or are there any songwriting themes that you keep for yourself?
I don't know that there's any topics that are off limits. I think when I write about things that are difficult for me to write about or to talk about, like, I build in protection for myself by not sharing super specific details. Like, I always want to protect my own past and my own secrets. And I also want to protect the identities of the people that I'm writing about. Like, I'm not interested in, like, doing, like, an expose on anyone. Like, I want to tell these stories and I want to share the themes that I've encountered in my life. And I don't feel like it would serve me to withhold any of those themes from public consumption. But it's really important to have a barrier in terms of, like, identifying information. Yeah. And I think that I'll always continue to do that because it enables me to write about things that are really challenging to write about and talk about without feeling like I've totally exposed myself to the world.
Yeah. You know, people talk about how songwriting can be healing and therapeutic. Is there a part of that needs more nurturing for it to take hold? Like, the process of itself of writing isn't the therapy, it's what builds off of it. Or maybe it needs to reach an audience and it needs to be echoed back to you before it gives you that feeling of healing. Is that something that you experience, or do you find different points and different times generate that for you?
Well, I find that it probably is not the healthiest attitude to, like, wait for feedback from the world about your writing to experience catharsis. Like, that definitely would be, I feel like that would be a real trap.
It would be terrible, like, for social media people, because that outlet is right there, and that could be damaging for sure.
Yeah. And I think there's so many songs that to your point earlier about, like, is there anything I hold for myself? Sometimes there will be songs I write about certain topics that, even if I'm really proud of them, I'm like, this doesn't need to be shared. Like, this one was just for me. And the writing itself was really cathartic. But the way that I talk about songwriting as a tool in my healing process is more cathartic than therapeutic. Like, I am in therapy with a therapist, and, like, that I had therapy yesterday, and that's super huge for me. And, like, I think people who are like, oh, or I don't need to go to therapy, art is my therapy. I'm like, no, therapy is therapy. Art is catharsis. Art is self-expression. It's healing. It's communal. There's so many beautiful things about making and consuming art. But if you have, like, mental health problems, ideally you're also in therapy.
This is World Cafe. We're here with Jensen McCrae. I want to get into another performance, Savannah. And, you know, this is one of the songs that's best heard with the lyrics pulled up on Genius. Can you talk a little bit about the joy of putting words together, of finding a way to make things sound good, whether it be, like, lyrically idea or just sonically? It's pleasing to hear these words in this order.
Well, it's really satisfying to have songwriting as my primary medium because I find it to be, as creative as it is, also, like, a deeply mathematical process, because I write in a traditional verse chorus structure. I make music that arguably is pop music. Like, you know, obviously it veers to other genres too. There's folk, there's country, there's all these other things going on, but it really is pop music. And that structure necessitates being able to fit syllables into spaces. Like, if you're doing stuff that's really, really experimental, you know, that is, you have a little bit more freedom. Like, you don't have to follow a rhyme scheme necessarily. You don't have to follow, like, a syllabic structure in any way. But when you're writing in this traditional format, there's math involved. And I find that very enjoyable. Like, in addition to the fact that I'm, like, reaching inside of myself and expressing myself, like, I love forcing myself to find a better slant rhyme or a smaller number of syllables or a greater number of syllables that make it feel more, give it a more pleasant mouth feel and also like ear feel, I guess. And when I can figure that out, it's incredibly satisfying.
Oh my God. I love this. I love this. Now we just need audio commentary on the songs now too. So it's like, listen for this, listen for this. Actually, people should listen to this live recording of Savannah. It's Jensen McRae here on World Cafe.
There is an intersection in your college town with your name on it. With your name on it. You always said you couldn't wait to tear it down. I should have been honest. Called you out on it. 'Cause I see signs from God and I tread lightly on the wire. You see him in the water and you try to start a fire.
Cafe. It's a performance of Savannah recorded live here in Philadelphia from Jensen McRae. Her new album is available now. I don't know how, but they found me. My name is Stephen Kaleo, contributing host. This is World Cafe. Listening to the album, it's clear you know your way around a melody. So no surprise that you went to school for it. Sort of. You've got a degree in popular music performance from USC. And I love thinking about what makes a song catchy. Are there some of the things that you took away from that program that you still use to this day when you are crafting songs?
One of the biggest takeaways that I remember is in one of my songwriting classes, we talked about the concept of toggling, which is basically like having lines that are more external, like giving like sensory descriptions of what's happening, whether it's things you can see or hear or smell, whatever, and then toggling back to more internal descriptions of things that are like about emotions and psychology and things like that. Like the example that my professor gave was Why Georgia by John Mayer, mm-hmm. where the first line is, I'm driving down 85 in the type of morning that lasts all afternoon.
I'm driving 85 in the
inside the gloom.
And it's like, oh, that's scene setting. We can see ourselves on this highway. And then the next line is just stuck inside the gloom. And that's a little bit more internal. And that's a little bit more emotional and psychological. And so we went through that song and some other songs and did show like what that looked like to toggle back and forth between the two modes. And that's something that I think about all the time when I'm writing. If I find myself writing something that's a little bit more vague, I will be like, oh, okay, how can I set this and ground this into something physical? And if I'm just listing a lot of like scene settings, I'm like, okay, but how is that making everyone in this scene feel?
Wow. It's just so much more complex than less fact, more emotion, which is what I hear so many songwriters saying. But it's like, it can't be all emotion. You need something to ground it to.
And I think it depends on the genre that you're working in. And the same goes with melody. Like, I can't remember exactly which class this was in that that we talked about this. But like, and this also happened just through being in like pop songwriting sessions for other artists as well. But a lot of times great pop songs have this huge rise and fall and this huge variance in their melody. Like, you'll look at a chorus of a pop song and like the first few notes will be really, really low and it'll suddenly jump the octave. And that big dynamic variance is like what makes it feel like more urgent and catchy, like what will get people's attention on first listen. And so that's something that I also try to do. I try not to stay in the same register for, you know, especially if the whole verse is very low, the chorus now has to be in the higher part of my register and vice versa. If I have a line that where every single lyric is basically on the same note, then I need to have a follow-up line where they're going up and down and up and down and up and down. Like, there needs to be movement to keep people's attention spans are short, and there needs to be movement. And you can't just do the same thing over and over.
Absolutely fascinating. We're here with Jensen McCrae on World Cafe. One of the things I want to talk about with regard to the album, your vocal performances just floored me. And not just the performances, but the range, the dynamic throughout the album. It feels like at certain songs you're inhabiting like another person. How did you choose where your register or your delivery was going to go? How does the song sort of dictate where you go with your performance?
Well, there's certain songs that are more like emotionally evocative than others. And I feel like in the case of a song like Tuesday or Savannah, like there was, I mean, I think it's Tuesday in particular.
Yeah, please. That was the one that made me like, what the heck is going on here? And then it hits you like a ton of bricks.
Well, I'm glad. That one was one where like I started really low and not even really conversational, because it's like lower in a lower part of my register than the part that would be considered conversational. And it's, to me, that is helpful to be, it's very intimate to draw the listener in as I'm like telling this extremely sad story. And then the chorus is very sweeping. And like the text of the song is like, it was just Tuesday to you. If you spent a day in my shoes, you'd know how it feels to be used. And the theme of that song is like finally telling someone who has harmed you, who has abused you, like, you don't even, I'm taking my power back. Like, how dare you do the things that you did, and how dare you not acknowledge that you did them? And so in the verses, there's this weakness and there's this fragility and there's this vulnerability. And then the choruses are very sweeping and big and loud, because that's the part of the song that feels like reclamation. And at the end of the song, I return to that very low part of my register, because it, to me, that song, in the same way that the album is about this topic, it's about how healing isn't linear. And for every moment of triumph and victory, and this moment where you feel like maybe you've reached the end of your healing journey, you're going to go backward and you're going to feel weak and small again. And that's kind of like the arc that the song maps over the course of my vocal register.
Thanks for sharing that. I want people to have a chance to hear some of Tuesday. It's Jensen McCrae on World Cafe.
'Cause it was just Tuesday to you. If you spent a day in my shoes, you know how it feels to be used. To me,
this is World Cafe. Jensen McCrae is my guest. The new album is available now. I don't know how, but they found me. Up next, I Can Change Him. And this was a song that initially was going to be a song just for you, at least from what I read, that this wasn't something that was going to go out into the world because you have a specific reference to an artist that your ex listened to. Shout out to Josh Ostrander, a.k.a. Mondo Cosmo, who is the artist in question, not the ex. What ultimately made you comfortable with like putting this song out into the world?
Well, it was just so much feedback from the people that I was working with and the people that they had shared the album with, like, or the, you know, a variety of demos with. Everyone was like, oh my God, that song, I Can Change Him. Like, you have to put that on. That like, a lot of people wanted it to be a single. And I was like, well, it's not a single. But I came around to eventually realizing, like, if it means that much to this many people, and if this many people see themselves in it, then surely I can put it out. And it is funny because I messaged Mondo Cosmo while I was dating this person, and I was like, oh, Plastic Soul is one of our songs. And he responded and was like, oh, that's awesome. And then I put this album out years later. I'm like, I wonder if he's heard the song and if he's like, I remember her. But I haven't talked to him about it, so I don't know. But yeah, that's an example of a thing of like, I'm content to put those kind of details in a song because that's not like doxing anybody.
Right.
But it's a thing that like, it's like an, if you know, you know thing. And it's a thing that like, I think even if, you know, your song with your partner or your ex is not Plastic Soul by Mondo Cosmo, then you have a song that you can't listen to anymore. You have a song that is, surely everyone has a song that's like, I actually can't do that one right now. And so even if it's not that song is a great symbol and stand in for whatever it is for the people listening.
Should I let Josh know that you're trying to take money off his plate? Food off the table?
No.
Less songs. Now that song is ruined for you. I think that's a really fascinating point where it's like, yeah, there's not enough distinguishing information. I think that makes sense. And if you know, you know. Let's listen to a live performance of I Can Change Him. It's Jensen McRae here on World Cafe.
Same old $8 cologne, same old he can't be alone, same old cigarettes he rolls, same old Cosmos plastic soul, wisdom sketches on his face, still won't learn to act his age, same old little tricks he plays, I guess some things never change. Dirty films, he still never gets his fill, and I know he never will. Here I am still handing out the benefit of the doubt, knowing how he'll let me down, knowing I know that by now. Maybe I just love him. Maybe I just think all he needs is a little something. Maybe that little something's me.
Same.
recorded live on World's Cafe. It's Jensen McRae, performance of I Can Change Him. It's from her new album, which is available now. I don't know how, but they found me. I'm Kaleo. It's World Cafe here with Jensen McRae. I am so intrigued by the sonics of this record. There's a little bit of Lilith Fair. There's a little bit of early 2K, CMT. It's fascinating. I'm curious how you pinpointed what this record was going to sound like, because you do play with a lot of different textures, but there feels like there are some similarities that take me back to a time and a place.
Well, I have to give so much credit to Brad. Like, so much of that was his doing. And a big part of it also was my song, The Rearranger, which is the opening track of the album.
So good. Yeah.
Thank you. I did that song with Joe London and Grant Averill, and that the form that it's in on the album is basically the day one demo. And that ended up being like a huge kind of guiding light in terms of the sonics of the album. And when I sent it to my manager, it's like, they immediately said, like, this feels really nostalgic. This is taking me back. Like, it feels very like 90s, 2000s vibes. And when I was making my first album as well, when I was working with my producer, Rocky, when he first heard my music, he said it reminded him of the singer-songwriters he loved as a kid in the 90s. And so that's kind of always been kind of my vibe without meaning to, because like I grew up on the music of the 2000s, but it wasn't like a conscious choice that was going to be what I would end up making. But I feel like there's something about my songwriting that brings producers to add those kinds of sounds and build those kinds of palettes. And I think it's great.
This is World Cafe. We're here with Jensen McRae. One more thing I want to talk about, because it seems like it's something that's very, very important to you. You've talked about it in your writing several times. It's the book, The Idiot. Is it Elif Batuman? Is that how you...
I think it's Elif Batuman, but I'm not 100% sure. That's how I've been pronouncing it.
I appreciate it. I'm going to trust your judgment on this.
Okay.
You sang the praises of the book. Favorite novel. Based on your enthusiasm, I ordered the book. It has not arrived yet.
Oh, wow.
But so I'm going to put this to you. If you were the person writing the blurb synopsis on the inside jacket that I was about to read this book, what would it say? What am I getting myself into?
So The Idiot is about an 18-year-old girl. She's a first-generation daughter of Turkish immigrants. She's a freshman at Harvard in 1995, and she's led this very sheltered life where everything in her life has been centered around academic achievement and getting to Harvard, and now she's there, and she has to figure out what to do with the rest of her life. And she is coming of age at a time when email is becoming more widespread, and so she's kind of experimenting with the form, like, as a budding writer. She has always had this sneaking suspicion that she was going to be a writer. There's a quote in the book where she says, like, I always knew I was going to be a writer, even though I had never written anything that I expected anyone would want to read. And so she becomes fascinated with email. She starts meeting all of these other Harvard students who she finds equally fascinating and frustrating. And she develops this very strange, semi-romantic email relationship with an older mathematics student named Yvonne, who's from Hungary. And the first half of the book is her freshman year at Harvard, getting to know Yvonne and her friend Svetlana and her friend Ralph. And then the second half of the book is her going to Hungary to teach English in a remote village in the hopes that she might be able to spend a little bit more time with Yvonne before he leaves for grad school. And so it's about this girl who has, like, you know, never really tried to forge an identity outside of being a good student and a good daughter, trying to figure out what it means to be a person and what it means to communicate and what language is really all about and what it means to fall in love, sort of, but also not really.
You're hired. Wow.
Thank you.
if anyone's listening in that camp and they need a press person, you've just nailed the job. What did you gravitate to in the story? Was it the character? Was it their journey? Something else?
It was all of the above. I read the book for the first time when I was 20. And so to me, reading about a college freshman was this very recent memory. Like, yeah. I could very easily remember being 18 and just leaving home for the first time. And I just had never read a book about a girl my age who had life experiences at all similar to mine. Like, so many stories about teenagers are about them being like just really wild and reckless and having all these crazy adventures. And I just hadn't had that. Like, my teenage years and my early 20s were like, I'm just a good girl. Like, I just never did anything like wrong or wild at all. And like, it was so refreshing to read about a girl who was at college and she was like, I don't really want to drink and I've never kissed anyone. And like, I just want to read books and like have interesting conversations with my friends. And that was just like, it was just incredibly startling to realize that there were books out there that might be about people who resembled me in any way. And there were just so many things that she said that felt like things that had been lifted from my own brain. And I read reviews of the book afterward, and some of them were criticizing the character for being like cold or detached or emotionless. And I'm like, no, she's so sensitive. You guys just don't get it.
This is World Cafe. We're here with Jensen McRae. We've got one more song to get to, Let Me Be Wrong. What do you want to tell people about this before we hear it? I've asked you so many direct questions. You got the floor. Whatever you want to say about this song.
Well, I mean, this song started as me wanting to write a song that felt like a combination of Silk Chiffon by Muna and I Want to Get Better by Bleachers, because I had been on tour with Muna right before I wrote the song, and I sang Silk Chiffon with them on stage several times. And I realized that I wanted a moment, or maybe several moments in my own set, that had that kind of buoyancy in them. Because so many of my songs up to that point were just like very sad and slow. And I realized when I was going into making this album, I was like, I want there to be just more. I want my audience to experience more feelings, and I want there to be a place where people can scream and dance. So I knew I wanted that. And then when I went into the studio the day that I wrote this song, I'd been thinking a lot about, one, I want to write a song called Let Me Be Wrong. I had that title in my head. And I was like, I want it to feel like I Want to Get Better by Bleachers. I love the idea of like just feeling like you're finally forgiving yourself and you're finally trying to get better and you're finally trying to grow and change and kick old bad habits. And I've always been, you know, a middle daughter / eldest daughter, technically, and recovering perfectionist, former gifted kid, like all these things that are just mean to death on the internet. Like, I have been all of that for so long, and I just wanted to write a song that was finally like, I'm forgiving myself for the ways that I've ever thought that I didn't measure up, and I'm finally letting myself be a normal 20-something and just screw up a lot.
Beautifully said. Let's take a listen to it. Let Me Be Wrong. It's Jensen McRae on World Cafe.
Trust my gut and belly flop. Call the coward just to talk, though it's never worth the cost to dance on glass with my shoes off. Something rotting in my brain tells me do it anyway, and do not fear the long decay, and don't ask God if it's okay. Those girls at 17, they got glass ceilings and rings. Those girls got everything. Something twisted in my chest says
recorded live at Non-Convention in Philadelphia. It's Jensen McRae with a performance of Let Me Be Wrong. The new album is available now. I don't know how, but they found me. Jensen, this was an absolute pleasure. Congratulations on the album. Here's to a great rest of 2025, and look forward to seeing what you have in store for us in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Awesome. Jensen McRae, everyone. We're back in a minute with more World Cafe.